Well, we have places that could be warmer, but I think, Tammy, the polar vortex is even supposed to reach you guys, isn't it?
Yes, and you feel it. It's in the 40s, but it's like dropping fast. You know,
Yeah.
sometimes it's just the difference that's so shocking more than the temperature.
Right. Yeah. And that really fast drop can be tricky for the plant beings too, for sure. Yeah. So Tenny, are you guys the hot spot at this moment? He's might not be on yet.
Yeah, we're in the high 60s today, but it's very windy. There's a lot of wind.
So
And it's going to drop 15 degrees overnight, supposedly.
Well, it's exciting. I have friends who are up in Leadville this week, and I thought, ooh, I bet it's pretty chilly up in Leadville right now. Well, I think we're gathered. We are a nice screen full of faces. So let's sit for a little bit. I'm going to do something slightly different today. But the not slightly different thing is that we get to begin with some meditation. Part of the magic of bells is the way they connect everything. Feels as if the sound of the bell permeates everything so thoroughly, reaches into all the any and all little corners of being. And so it can drop us immediately into the experience of co-occurring with everything. Thank you. What do you trust? Trust breathing in, that after I breathe out, I will breathe in. Don't even have to think about it. I trust that wherever I find myself, in whatever condition, I'll still call it here. This is here. When I'm dying, that will be the here of dying. Right now, here, I am warm on a cold, cold day. And I find I can trust that I can feel some continuity in this here. That doesn't rely on my knowing if my picture of it is accurate. My here is mysteriously continuous and indivisible, comes all together, me included. As much as I might call them separate, my nose appears along with the air that comes into it. There's no iota of separation between them. Continuous, in time and space. Births and deaths are real in a sense, and yet they don't interfere with this continuity. They're part of it. Today, I'd like to begin by returning to a couple of points from our last conversation. And one was to the statement that vow puts you in allegiance with inner pattern. The implication then is that existence tissue itself is your freedom. in allegiance with inner pattern, you're free. And what is that allegiance? And what do we do with this freedom? Another statement that comes forward is trust yourself to what is beyond you. Let it be the nurturing center. Trust yourself to what is beyond you. It seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? Trust yourself to what is beyond you. Let it be the nurturing center. What this one brings up for me is is the sense of, just a second. The sense of meditation as how we ground ourselves in the groundlessness of dark enigma, that in the experience of allowing falling away of even body and mind, yeah. Falling away of a sense of thingness, the thingness of me, the thingness of my mind, the thingness of other things. when I allow that to fall away, then what is beyond the grasp of my usual way of knowing, beyond any sense of myself or need to hold a sense of myself, in my experience of sitting quietly and releasing my hold on things, then what is beyond me becomes utterly trustworthy, connected, I think, to that sense of here and continuity that I spoke of in our meditation. So grounding ourselves in the groundlessness of dark enigma, and it was reminding me of the fact that, you know, we can't actually see Earth, right? You see the floor, you see the ground, you see the snow on the ground or the grass on the ground or the pavement on the ground. And yet we completely trust it. And when there's a moment, as I have had sometimes, and I had this feeling for a while pretty often, and then it sort of faded away again. But the feeling of looking at the street that I was walking on or driving on, or even looking over and imagining, realizing I didn't actually know that there's anything under there. Right? That there's just vast space under there. Which is in fact true. There is more space than anything else under there, right? We know from physics. And yet we know it holds us. And we can feel the pull in our bodies. And so even though we on our ball of earth are you know, careening through space in the wildest pattern, more complex than we could begin to describe. We trust it. And so we're not actually trusting what we know. I think we're actually trusting what is beyond us without even thinking about it. So trusting that which we is beyond you, trusting the mystery itself. Another weird little logical turn is that any belief that you trust will turn out to be untrustworthy. And we know that, you know, because it's happened to us again and again and again, right? From the time that we were infants and we thought, you know, that if mom went out of the room, she was gone, you know, well, that turned out not to be true. And so our whole life is a series of discovering that what we believe is not actually true. And so what is true is that we mostly don't know. And that is turns out to be actually the most trustworthy thing, doesn't it? And so it's oddly consoling to rest there and not be, and for a little while, not be playing the game of yes and no, you know, oh, this is true. Oh, no, it's not, you know, that a game on which we expend huge amounts of energy necessary to stay alive. But it's really, really nice to put it down for a bit. And trust the mystery. And the result of that is what Hinton describes as moving with the dynamic energy of cosmos. Moving with, that's like putting being in allegiance with the inner pattern or being in alignment. It's a word that Jerry lit up for me at one point, and I just, it keeps coming back to me. You know, being in alignment with the inner pattern, moving with the dynamic energy of cosmos. And we can feel it. And then Linji says, grasp things and use them, but without names arising, which seems to me very much like practical advice for what it's like when you're moving with the dynamic energy of cosmos, that you simply pick something up and use it, you know, and there, then we have all of those hands and each holding, you know, one a toothbrush, one a telephone, you know, one a thunderbolt. And grasp things and use them, but without names arising, you know, like reaching behind your head in the night for a pillow that doesn't need to be called pillow in the dark. Trusting that mystery. So from the, so about awakening, there were a couple of things there that I found especially interesting. I think, you know, I think the chapter bears, you know, more than one read, and I don't think I want to do sort of an explication de text on this one. But to say that I noticed myself reacting against it, in some ways, completely agreeing with it. And yet, I think it was, you're really describing enlightenment and what about endarkenment? You know, was the reaction that kept coming up in me. I might not be right about that. You know, again, that was my mind throwing up a position, but it was a position that came out of a kind of discomfort. And it's not poor David Hinton's fault. He's describing as the very best he can this experience of sudden, the sudden experience of body and mind fallen away, the sudden experience of really cosmos just sitting with cosmos, old good friends. And so that's lovely. And the shadow side of it is that it gets held, and I don't think he's doing this, maybe I'm doing it, you know, that it seems to be held up as a perfected state. And perfected states are dangerous, in my opinion. So, or at least the promise of perfected states is dangerous. Because they just happen, you know? If you make them seem nearly unattainable, then I think I have a problem with that. So anyway, so this chapter on awakening, one of the bits that I loved was when body and mind move as Tsujan, you fathom Tao and understand mind. And I love it because it seems reverse, right? And I think I mentioned this last time. We think that we first have to fathom Tao and understand mind. And then, you know, body and mind will move as Tsujan. But actually, it happens to us. And sometimes we don't even notice it, or we notice it as a moment of particular wonder. But that's it. You know, it's not, we, maybe that's all at once. But anyway, when body and mind move as Tsujan, you fathom Tao. And I love that word fathom. It's ocean word, right? You're all the way down in it. It's not that you understand it and could write a dissertation on it. You fathom Tao and understand mind in mind's own way. And so Ma then says, what about, okay, so when body and mind move as Tsujan, I think I'm just kind of in love with that because it feels so much like a naming body and mind and yet not letting them be separate. When body and mind move, you know, that's one movement, right? That's one movement, not two separate movements. Body and mind move. And it's like, you know, we can play with that. I think my body and mind will go make dinner now, you know. when body and mind move as Tsujan, you fathom Tao and understand mind. And then Ma says, it's simply where you are when asked what is the Dharma or something like that. It's simply where you are when you let go of that self you happen to be. Right? So not even denying that there is a self you happen to be, right? But it's simply where you are, not what you are, right? It's where you, it's where you find yourself when you let go of that self you happen to be. And so it has that ring of, well, this room is just this room. It's just my room. And yet suddenly it's alive. Suddenly it's radiant. Suddenly it's me. Suddenly it's all of us being. And so we can play with that. We can actually just play, taking that as an invitation to an experience. We can play with it, you know, swinging. I don't know. I bet everybody would loved swinging. I can't imagine not having loved swinging. And we, when I was a little girl, under eight, we had in the backyard a tree with a very high up branch, and my dad hung a rope and a board. And so we had this really long swing, and I had really long pigtails, and I would swing and lean back so that my pigtails dragged on the ground every time I passed the ground. And it was just utter freedom. And then, you know, you'd go so high that you'd lose the seat, right? That you would no longer actually be quite in contact with the seat. Woo! And your tummy would do that little flip. And where you are when you let go of that self you happen to be. Bing, did you ever not know how to do that? I don't think so. Then, how do we live this then? How do we enact our allegiance to this love-generating mystery? Hinton talks about your wild and fearless mind, you know, and I don't know about you, but when I first read the phrase, I just went, you know, there's this thing comes up, right? Well, my mind's not especially wild and fearless. But then you get to ask yourself, is that really true? You know, actually, my mind certainly is wild and fearless, and no wonder I can't control it. Certainly wilder than I can tame. And so your wild and fearless mind is not afraid of any of my judgments, you know. And so your wild and fearless mind, what does it become manifest, right? How do we enact our allegiance to this love-generating mystery? So I had some thoughts about this, and they're not particularly original thoughts. I think they're things that you already know. So I'll try to be brief. But it felt right to me to kind of make a list, you know? So we, number one, which is just the number one that's throughout our text and throughout the teachings of all of our ancestors, is we just keep returning to it, right? How do we enact our allegiance to anything? We just keep returning to it. Isn't it funny? I don't know about you, but I find it funny how quickly I discard sometimes the thing that is most obviously true, right? how do I enact my allegiance to it? I just keep coming back to it. Yeah. And so we have a technology of coming back to it even. We got things we can do, meditation, inquiry, koans, designed to help us keep coming back to it. That's really all they're for. Mindfulness practices, and I mean that in the sense of just noticing. And you know, there are a lot of aspects of that, but the practices of noticing without judgment are really powerful. It's that, whose quote was it? Frank, I bet you remember, the just and loving gaze to meet. Okay. I don't think it was Gertrude Stein, but I'll try to remember. But to meet what we meet with a just and loving gaze, that's what I call mindfulness. And generosity. So meditation, inquiry, mindfulness, and generosity. Generosity just meaning just do something to help. Doesn't matter if you think it's good or not. You know, doesn't matter if you think it's the thing or not. Just do something to try and help, and that will transform you. That will bring you right back to the love-generating mystery awareness. Simone Weil, thank you. And so those things. So, and what are we coming back to? Another way of describing that David Hinton gives that I think is quite lovely is coming back to the experience of presence as the tissue individuated as 10,000 things in constant transformation. Presence as the tissue individuated as 10,000 things in constant transformation, and absence as the generative void from which this ever-changing realm of presence perpetually emerges, the cosmos seen as generative tissue, that experience. Not a concept of it, but the experience of it. Those technologies, techniques, methodologies, whatever, instructions of our handed down through time from all of the men and women and children, boys and girls before us, and lions and ants and trees and flowers. Okay, that's number one. Whew, that was not short. I'll try to be shorter on the other ones. Number two, ritual helps. Ritual really steadies us. Beauty, ritual brings with it beauty. Yeah, music, art. And it brings with it surrender and community. All essential steadying presences. Three, we let endarkenment itself help us. So how do we come back to the essential experience of our awakening? Endarkenment. Endarkenment, so it's almost like there's a circularity to that. in a way, right? Awakening sets us on a path of endarkenment, and endarkenment brings us back to our awakening again and again. We let the world break us, and we let awakening make us whole. So, but we could just, we could say the voice of endarkenment is, I don't know, so let's inquire. Number four, vows help. Especially vows held in community. That really, you know, the conspiracy of friends, right? Awakening as a conspiracy of friends. I think the vows are like the pledge of the conspirators sometimes. And five, attention to basics will help us stabilize, especially in a time like this time when things don't feel stable. I don't feel stable. Nothing around me looks very stable. Attention to basics will help, and they will stabilize our effort and help us develop strength. So at a time when we don't think we can do anything particularly ambitious, we do something not so ambitious. We sort of start over. Okay, so now let's sit for a few minutes, and then I'll go on to the next part. And there still will be a lot of time for some conversation, this being our last session together. How do we experience the tranquility of moving integral to this cosmos, slowly opening through its possibilities? How do we experience the tranquility of moving integral to this cosmos, slowly opening through its possibilities? One, for instance, is incantation. And I noticed that Hinton's bits of translation of the Mind Sutra had this quality of incantation. So I'll just bring that into our meditation for a minute. This beautiful world of things, this world is no different than emptiness, and emptiness no different than this world. This world, exactly emptiness, emptiness, exactly this world. Our perceptions and thoughts, actions and distinctions, they too are all like this. And so, in emptiness, this beautiful world of things is absence. Perceptions, absence. Thoughts, actions, distinctions. Absence, eyes and ears, nose and tongue, self and meaning and chi mind itself. Absence, this beautiful Dharma world, its color and sound, smell and taste and touch. Absence, the world of sight, and even the world of chi mind, its meanings and distinctions. Absence, absence, wisdom, and absence, absence, wisdom extinguished. Absence, old age unto death. And absence, old age unto death extinguished. Now, in honor of this auspicious beginning of the year of the yin metal ox, I want to share with you some notes, some bits of something I received gratefully in the mail about this year. And it's about sort of more than this year, but one of the first bits of it was about honoring, this part of what's really helpful in this year of the ox. Of course, helpful anytime, but maybe especially helpful now is to really rely on the wisdom of the ancestors. And the author of this thing that I read said, noted, wisdom has no preferences. And I thought, well, that's a familiar sounding line to us, right? The great way is not difficult, just dislikes picking and choosing. And everything is self-resolving. So much also the Taoist idea, right? So what's unresolved will resolve itself while something else is unresolving itself, and so on and so on. But one of the sort of key ideas about this year of the yin metal ox was reestablishing the foundation. And in reestablishing the foundation, first, it's a good idea to acknowledge our lack of control. I think all of us are very keenly aware of our lack of control right now. I'm not sure how much more it could be in our faces. But this, and there is just, and I feel as if really in taking up the matter that we've taken up in this series, we have been looking at reestablishing the foundation, taking a fresh look at how we experience the fabric of being. And then also reestablishing the foundation of a practice. Well, what does my practice look like if it's based in my partial realization, or my realization of what I realize and my recognition of what I don't realize, what I don't make real in the world? What is foundational? Reestablishing that. And and apparently the ox's native element is yin, earth. And the symbol, the kanji for that is with two horizontal lines and a vertical line crossing them. Or crossing the top one and ending on the bottom one. I should have made a drawing of it. Anyway, that's earth. And apparently it also has qualities that are like space, which just tickle me, because it's sort of like what I was talking about earlier, that, you know, earth totally reliable, and yet, you know, it's mostly space, and the spaciousness that comes of that, of the spaciousness of earth, I guess. As the indestructible openness in which all things happen, Isn't that a lovely phrase, that the indestructible openness is sort of like what Hinton is calling absence, the indestructible openness in which all things happen. That being a quality of earth. That's interesting, isn't it? I found it really interesting to think of earth that way, to connect earth with that sense of the indestructible openness. Ox related to yin has a quality of malleability, a kind of spacious quality also. And apparently was the ox was what made agriculture possible, was who made agriculture possible. So and really until people learned to work with an ox in China, there was a hunter-gatherer society. And the ox was, they tried to get horses to pull a plow, but horses were not about to pull a plow. And so it was discovered then that that oxen not only pull a plow, but that they'll go very straight. They like to walk very straight, and then they'll turn around and walk straight back. So that the and we could argue about the benefits versus other changes of agriculture, but definitely transformative, allowed a lot more people to live on the land, for one thing. But here, that image, you know, of what, you know, being willing to pull the plow, walking straight, is pointing to the rewards of a kind of consistent, patient, hard work, and not a, and a gentle strength. That's non-aggressive. And so there's the idea of hard work, not as really more, more as consistent work, you know, work, but not efforting, just steadily going. And apparently there's a kind of emphasis in ox years. There can be a kind of emphasis on the way things are done, you know, not so much sort of we're relying on wild creativity, you know, which would be tempting at this time, but that it's more a time for steady she goes, you know, and actually respecting some tradition. Apparently this yin ox is also associated with Guan Yin, which is really interesting. I wouldn't necessarily have thought of that connection. But the and in pictures, Lao Tzu is shown riding an ox. And this is representing the natural wisdom of Wu Wei. Yeah. And if you think about that, our koan about Wan Yin just reaching behind her head in the night for the pillow, that's Wu Wei, right? Nothing extra at all, just an action that just exactly meets the moment. And that practicing that natural wisdom of not overthinking things, just kind of doing it the way it's done, simply, that connects, that the effect of that is to make possible a kind of humility in service. And I can kind of feel that, you know, if I feel like I need to make something special happen here, then there is kind of a lack of humility in that attitude for me. Because I'm making it about me rather than just about service. And the advice was to look for the thread, what remains valuable. And I thought that's a kind of lovely inquiry. I think I want to spend some time with that. What remains valuable in a time when the value of so many things is under question, is in question? So then a little bit about the qi dynamic of this ox. It's the still, silent, calm, slow power of winter. There's an association with just the kind of power that's present in winter and in the middle of the night. And in dreamless sleep, deep dreamless sleep, thinking of the power in deep dreamless sleep is kind of interesting because I don't think of that as powerful. And that there's a sense in which that it's like yin and yang unified, that spot of unification. And the movement is a movement of inward moving outward while outward moves inward, which is kind of fun to think about. I'm not sure I want to try to place a meaning on that. There was a recognition that the burden of grief is heavy in ox times, and we can sure identify with that. And that we need to, it's good not to shy away from contemplating death and mortality. And so it's not that we need to sort of obsess or make ourselves go there all the time, but it's just that there can be a temptation to close it off. And so rather than doing that, to really allow ourselves to acknowledge those feelings. The atmosphere of heavy, wet snow, damp earth, slow and sleepy with an element of drowning. I thought, ooh, that doesn't sound very promising. And yet there's a kind of recognition that if it's that sort of a time, then how do we live? And that ox energy of sort of slow and steady and gentle and respectful kind of feels right. So what do you do when things fall apart? You learn from the past and you put things back together. So this sense of this being a time to put things back together, but we're learning, you know, using what we learned from the past, and feeling the stability of the ground beneath us, working smart, not hard, but smart, slow and steady, laying groundwork. And the idea of solidifying new patterns of shared social responsibilities was interesting, because that, you know, listening to the Senate today, I thought that sort of rang, that sort of had a hopeful ring to it, you know, solidify new patterns of shared social responsibilities. That it seems like, you know, an endeavor worth committing to in whatever ways we do it, right? At home, in our community, in our sangha, and working towards that in the wider sphere as well. showing up for each other. And being fairly, apparently it's also a recommendation about how to work with the energy of this year is also to try to keep coming back to a focus, to try not to be too distracted by all the noise of various kinds, but to that's sort of part of being able to hoe a row, isn't it? And let routine help. And there was this phrase, wake down, not up. I thought, that's kind of cool. Maybe I'll have a year of waking down. And using a non-conceptual approach, just do it, sit and walk and sit and walk. You know, there's a, just do the things that we know. And the last bit of advice there was the best practice is the one you can do every day without fail. I thought, well, I guess, you know, there are a few things I do every day without fail. I brush my teeth pretty much every day without fail. So to notice which things can I actually do every day without fail. So that felt a little scattered as I, you know, a little bit like fragments, and I will send you the link so you can read that article for yourselves. But it felt to me very much like what I wanted to connect with as I came out of this study, because I do think it's worth thinking about and really giving some, offering ourselves some time to attend to what helps. If I really, I say I wish to live out my awakening, right? I say I wish to realize it in my life more and more deeply. If that's true, then it's good for me to pay attention to what helps me do that. Yeah? What actually brings that into play? So I'm going to stop there, and we have a fair bit of time for conversation. And this time, if there's nothing that's coming up having to do with what I've been talking about, but you have other things, you know, about that have come up for you along the way, or that are just coming up for you today, in our as we conclude this series, say we can bring we can entertain whatever you want to. Merrily.